list of his many accomplishments, but instead of bringing them to you, we have prepared a video so that you can appreciate why we have invited him here today. Let's take a look.
Get ready to see one of the most influential and dynamic Latino offensive speakers of the decade, Dr. Camilo Cruz. He's widely regarded in the Latin American corporate arena, Europe, and the U.S. Hispanic market as one of the most powerful Latino speakers in the fields of peak performance, business excellence, and leadership. His articles and columns are featured in some of the most prestigious Hispanic newspapers of the country. La Opinión, the largest Spanish-language newspaper in Los Angeles, wrote, Dr. Camilo Cruz's books and presentations have changed the lives of many people. He empowers and teaches individuals how to improve their quality of life. Florida Sun Sentinel says, Camilo Cruz is a Hispanic Tony Robbins, a Latino Dr. Phil. Edward James Olmos, Hollywood actor and producer of the Latino Book and Family Festival, says about Camilo, his ability to inspire and motivate others towards the achievement of their goals will have a great impact on the education and leadership of our Latino community. While Don Francisco, the most renowned television personality in Spanish language media, said, I find Dr. Cruz's book everywhere. I invited him to my show so he can share with us his success philosophy. Because I believe that if you can achieve your American dream, you can succeed anywhere. Camilo arrived in the U.S. in 1980 with no knowledge of the language and with no more credentials than a high school diploma, $200, and a bag full of dreams. The oldest son of school teachers from a modest home in Latin America, he came in search of his American dream, made it come true, and now teaches others how to make their dreams a reality. His enthusiasm, success philosophy, and refreshing perspectives on the American dream have delighted and enlightened Hispanic and mainstream audiences in the United States. His accomplishments are a great example of the entrepreneurial spirit that so characterizes the immigrant experience. Dr. Camilo Cruz earned his PhD in science from Seton Hall University and has been a professor at several universities in the U.S., where he has taught quantum physics, thermodynamics, chemistry, and mathematics. He has launched three successful companies and has served on the boards of several others. He's a trainer and a coach to Fortune 500 executives, educators, entrepreneurs, community and business leaders from companies such as AT&T, 3M, Goodyear, Coca-Cola, Chambers of Commerce, and professional associations in the U.S. and abroad. His work in support of the education and leadership of Latino communities has been recognized by a number of organizations in the U.S. and Latin America. An internationally known best-selling author of over 20 books, with sales approaching 1 million copies, Dr. Cruz is one of the most prolific Latino authors in the United States in the area of personal development. The Spanish version of his book, Once Upon a Cow, received the Latino Book Award for Best Self-Help Book in Spanish. So let's listen to Dr. Camilo Cruz tell us about the success principles he's already shared with people from all corners of the world through his books, articles, and live presentations on peak performance, business excellence, and leadership.
In fact, the office used to bother me when they didn't. When they forgot the expert thing, I was like, what happened, man? You just forgot to sell an expert. And everything was well until a few years ago, I was in New York City, and I heard from another speaker the definition of the word expert. Changed my life. From then on, I said, forget about the expert thing. Because he said that an expert is a man who knows 56 different ways of making love. A man who knows 56 different ways of making love, but doesn't know any woman. They have no practice, they have not done this or anything else, but they have a lot of fears. So you have to be careful. So I just got to mention next time that take that expert kind of thing out. But wow, this is exciting. I've been here since you guys started, and there's a lot of excitement here. And you know, it's funny because you see this is excitement, and you turn the TV on sometimes, or you read the papers, and there's such pessimism sometimes, isn't it? I mean, I was reading an article, I'm not sure if it's true or not, but it's terrible, even as a joke. I was reading an article that there was a town, because that's the thing with pessimism, that you're pessimist and it's contagious. Because it's contagious. So there was a town up north where it was so negative that a group of folks decided to start a pessimist club. When I read it, I'm kidding. A group of the article says that a group of neighbors have decided to start a pessimist club. But the interesting thing is that the article said that the project really never got off the ground because nobody could even work. How far is the pessimism? You know, so you just cannot allow pessimism into your life. But anyway, I know that if you're in this business, you know that attitude is everything, right? I address people and I talk about it to entrepreneurs and I said, no matter what, attitude is everything. Attitude is everything. And I didn't used to think that way all the time. I remember when I first got to this country, I'm originally from Colombia. I understand that there's a few Colombians here. I'm originally from Colombia, and I arrived here about 35 years ago. And you know, you arrive to a new country, and what you do is you just ask somebody. You ask the first person, oh, how do I do to succeed? What do I need to do? I want to succeed. I want to get ahead. And so I started working on my goals. I started working on my dreams. Back then, the only thing that I was told was, you know, you got to work hard. Just gotta work hard. If you want to succeed in this country, you gotta work hard. So I started working hard. And I had a job, and then I found another job. So I had two jobs. But you know, back then I never said I had two jobs. Because I thought that it didn't sound good to say I need two jobs. I felt that people were going to think that if what I was doing was worth it, one job would be enough. Right? So instead of having two jobs, that people said, two jobs. That little money you make, so you need two jobs. So in order to protect my self-esteem, I always said that I had a job and a hobby. I don't know if it did work or anything, but I always said, you know, Camille, so what do you do? Well, I have a job. I work like 80 hours a week in a college. And my hobby, I teach classes in school in the evenings. And so that was my hobby. I have my job and my hobby. My wife has three hobbies. We didn't see each other much, and we were always fighting, always bickering. I don't know if anybody wants to take a guess of what was our favorite topic of discussion. Money. How do you know about it? It was always about money. All the fights, all the discussions were about money. Not the essence of money. No, what are we going to do with so much money? No, we didn't. I don't understand. We work like 300 hours a week. And we can't make things happen. What's going on? What's happening? This is not the American dream. This is not what we're going to have. Is this it? And that's how I felt. And I was living in Newark, New Jersey back then. And Newark had the horrendous title of being the crime capital of the states. And so I was highly motivated to leave that place. Highly motivated, excited about leaving. And I just didn't know how to succeed. I thought hard work was it. And that's what I had been told all my life. You work hard and you succeed. And it wasn't happening to me. I got my BS, my master's, and my PhD. I was a professor of quantum chemistry, quantum physics, and thermodynamics in a university in New Jersey. And it wasn't happening. But you know, when you're really excited about what you want to do, when you're really searching, the answers are right there. They come to you if you're really looking for it. If all you're looking for is an excuse, anything will be fine. But if you're looking for an answer, it will present itself to you. And to me, that answer came in the form of a seminar like this. It was a seminar like this. I remember perfectly. It was somewhere around 1989, 1990, living in Newark. And all of a sudden, I opened the newspaper, and it said, motivational seminar, only for winners. I said, I gotta get this. Not because I felt like a winner. Honestly, I felt like, what if they recognize? What if they see my true, you know, way of life? What if they see that I'm not really a winner? But I said, I gotta get there. I was in Pittsburgh. And three men were going to be speaking. I only knew one of the speakers. The first speaker was a man that afterwards I became very fond of and good that we started publishing his books in Spanish. His name was Zig Ziglar. He was fine. He was excited. The second one was the only person, the only one that I knew, the only one of the three that I knew. I have read his books back in Colombia when I was a child. I have read his books in Spanish, and his name was Oakland Bean.
Oh my God.
How many have read his books? Wow. I was excited. But the third person who spoke, man, he really blew my mind. I mean, this guy, he was amazing. And he was called the Father of Positive Attitude. And he was 93 years old. My goodness, 93 years old. Anything this guy says, just do it. 93? I never in my life had seen anybody who was 93. This man, when he was introduced, I thought he was going to come out like. He comes out, he's introduced, he came out on the stage like this. I've been asked to talk about goal setting. And for that, I want to share with you my goals for the next 10 years.
Ridiculous. Who plans their failure? 80%
of the people. do that. They said, by your plan, we were successful. So, what this man, 93 years old, excited. Did I mention his name?
No.
His name was Norman Vincent Peale.
Oh, cool.
Norman Vincent Peale did two things that changed my life, man. First one is always set goals. Always set goals. Set goals for life, set goals for your business, set goals every time you start a new week, a new month, sales goals, how many people you plan to sponsor this month, what's your volume sales this month, how many times you're going to share the business opportunity with other people this week, all of that has to be planned. You said, this is it, this is the way it works. I mean, you go sometimes, you take a vacation of 2 days or 3 days somewhere, and sometimes you take a month planning those 3 days. Don't you?
Yeah.
Has anybody done that? I mean, you want to plan, you want to make sure that you know exactly where you have to go, and what to do, and what places, and the monuments, and what to visit, and you plan. You don't just take the suitcase and somebody asks you where you're going, but yet, our life, the most exciting of all trips, we have plans. Why are you going to do that? We'll see. Time will tell. We'll see as we go. Can you imagine that success plan? We'll see as we go. I don't know how you build something successful. So what he said, the first thing he thought was, you gotta have plans. You gotta set plans. Set goals. And the second thing was, you have to have a positive attitude. You have to have a positive mental attitude, he said. And I remember that in the seminar, he said, where is your positive mental attitude left and right now? And that would be a nice question for you to ask yourself. Where is your positive mental attitude level right now? From 0 to 10, if 0 is dead, and 10 is unstoppable, really excited, move away, I'm running. That's 10. Where are you right now? Don't think. Where have you been this week? If you're completely honest, where have you been this week with that positive mental attitude level? Because I have to be honest, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but That applause that you gave me when I came in, I do appreciate it. I don't want you to take this the wrong way. I do appreciate it. But that wasn't 10. That wasn't, in fact, that wasn't a diamond applause. I don't think that was even a silver applause. So I'm just going to give you an opportunity to be better at it, to improve it. Hopefully, I'm just going to give you an opportunity to see if we move away from the right. One, two, three. Ready?
Thank you.
telling him, I have no idea, but man, the guy believes. Now, that's the kind of people you want to be in business with. And it all started, all that attitude begins from the moment you say hi. You know, ever since I got here yesterday, I started greeting people. See what they tell me. I'm always doing this. Hi, how are you doing?
I wrote them down.
How are you doing, man? How's everything?
Fine.
How are you doing, man?
Not too bad.
Can you imagine that? Not too bad.
You mean you expected it to be a little worse?
I assume some people will tell you it could be worse. That immediately tells you what they've been thinking about. All they've been running here is what worse could be.
Some people surprised me. I said to someone, and they was behind the desk, and I was like,
how are you doing today?
Compared to what?
And people would be excited because They just show curiosity about why you're doing so fantastic. So that's one thing. Second thing, it might be that even though you say, yes, I will do it, just coming out of here, somebody asks, hey, Susie, how you not fine? If you find yourself falling back into those old habits, just correct yourself. Forgive yourself and correct yourself. Which is what you should do, right? Somebody, hey, Susie, how you doing? So-so. What so-so? Fantastic! Correct yourself. It's amazing. We don't do that. And we're allowed to. Because we're human beings. So we're allowed to make mistakes and correct ourselves. You know, and I see people all the time that they made a promise that we're not going to eat desserts anymore. They were not going to eat desserts because, and all of a sudden one dinner, they're like already down, already half of the cheesecake. And they have a spoon right here. And they remember they were not supposed to eat cheesecake. Now, what is the normal thing you should do at that point? You should put down the bottle. I forgot to thank God, I remember. Won't that take that away? Is that what people do? Not everybody you answer to that way will be excited about it. Don't ask me why. You'll tell fantastic to some people and they get upset. They ask it to me. One day somebody was interviewing me on the radio. So how are you doing, Dr. Gruden? Fantastic! He goes, so every day is fantastic for you. Every day!
To accept that failure is the end. That failure is to be avoided.
If there is the slightest possibility of failing, don't even try it. If you fail, just make sure you erase anything that says that you even tried. So nobody wants to fail. But the more I talk to successful entrepreneurs and business people, and I talk to business people here, and business leaders and political leaders, and a lot of them told me, you know, they could all trace their success back to a failure. And they never thought about failure as if it was a curse, black plague, nothing. They talk about failure as a learning opportunity. As an opportunity that brought them a lesson that they needed to hear. So I said, back in Buenos Aires, I was thinking, wait a minute. So if failure teaches you something, it cannot be the enemy. It can't be the enemy. So I started thinking, so what is the enemy? And I came up with an idea, and then I wrote a book. And then I said, the real enemy is mediocrity. The real enemy of success is not failure. It's mediocrity. It's when we settle for something else that we want to accomplish. And usually the way we talk about that settling for something else is by using excuses. So I wrote a book in Spanish, of course, called La Vaca, the cow. And I went here to the penguin thinking that there was an animal as well, so they would nice name for the book, La Vaca, the cow. I remember the guy said to me, I'm sitting with him talking about publishing the book in English, and he said, no American will be caught dead reading a book called La Vaca, the cow. The cow. And I told him the story. He said, the story is nice, but we're just going to have to do something about that title. So I thought about how the book begins, how the story begins, how every story, every fable begins once upon a time. So I merged the two together and I named the book Once Upon a Cow. And Once Upon a Cow is a story about eliminating excuses, getting rid of excuses. And it's a story of a family that was very, very poor. Poor, dead poor. Poor! I mean, they live in complete misery. They were living in a little shack that was falling apart. The water was coming through the roof, garbage all over the place. I mean, complete misery. But even though they were so poor, they owned a cow. They owned a cow. And the cow gave them two things. First, it gave them the milk, which was the only food with any nutritional value that they had. But it gave them even something that it was even more important than the milk. It gave them the feeling that at least they were not in complete misery. In other words, they said, yeah, I mean, we're poor, but we're not the poorest. I mean, we have nothing, but there are other people that don't even have a cow. So we have the cow of blessing, and if they complain, always somebody would come and say, you know what? Don't be so ungrateful. Be happy that at least you have your cow. You don't know how many people would love to have that cow. So they had this settled for, hey, you know, we're not too bad. I know we're bad, but we're not too bad. There are other people that want it. We have to count our blessings. And they lived in the middle of that poverty with the comfort of knowing that at least we have our cows. One day, the unimaginable happened. Somebody killed their cow. Oh boy, that was my first reaction was, oh boy. I was writing the book, so I knew that was happening.
You know, something happens when you lose everything. You lose a little bit when you're like the bottom of the box. Something happens, and it's like you make a decision. Do I want to stay there, or do I want to just bounce back? And gotta be honest, most people bounce back. If, as hard as they may feel at that precise moment, most people bounce back. And so they bounced back and they started to plant some little things they had, and seeds and tomatoes and lettuce and things they could eat. And after a while, that was not how they were eating that, now that they didn't have the milk. So they after a while, they had enough. So they took some of those produce and they went and sold them to their neighbors. And with that money, which was the first time in life they had money coming in, instead of eating that money, instead of buying something and eating it, they went and got more seeds and cleared more of a bigger patch and planted more and took care of it. And after a while, they had enough for them to sell to their neighbors and to go to the market square and sell the rest there. And all of a sudden, things started to look better. And they were starting to dress a little better and have a little better things until one day they just turned out that shack and built a better house. And they came out of poverty and they found a way to success. And my question to you is, do you think that if they still had their cow, they would have accomplished all the things they did? What do you think? Why not? There would be no need for it. There would be no need for it. They would be just like, hey, why work? Relax. Don't kill yourself. You're not doing too bad. You don't need that business. You kidding me? In 17 years, you'll retire. That's just around the corner. There's a lot of ways to rationalize your mediocrity. A lot of ways. I'm not doing too bad. Well, for a person that never went to school, I'm not doing too bad. I'm not fat, just have big bones. And there's a lot of things that you can say. A lot of things. And there's a lot of ways to rationalize your mediocrity and a lot of excuses. And you probably, when you share this business, you find all of the excuses, right? Yep. So, you want to get started? Well, I wish I could, but I have no time. How many of you heard that? Yeah. When somebody tells you, you have no time, you should go,
yeah.
telling me something. We would probably never have heard this music if he hadn't used that as a cap. But you know, just when you think it cannot get any worse, you know, because somebody, I wish I could tell you, and then the universe recognized his decision and he gave back his hearing. In fact, by 46 he was completely deaf. Completely. Now, somebody else would have said, well, with a little bit of hearing you could do something, but like this, nothing. Zero. Oh, time to check out. Don't call me again. I'm out of here. Music is out of my life. He would have said that. I mean, we see people in business that quit for much less than that, right? He could have said that. But instead, you know what? Because this is what winners do. When there is that, when the door closes, then they open a window somewhere. And if there's no window, they cave a tunnel, they jump, they do whatever. But they don't give up. And what Beethoven did was say, well, you know, I cannot play music in public, which was how he made his money. But I'm going to do what I can do now with my music, which is to compose. Because my music is here, and it's here. So he sat down, and he started composing. And he said, I'm going to compose. So he would sit down, and listen to what he did. He recognized each of the keys in a piano have a specific vibration, right? A tone that has specific vibration. So he started trying to compose it without shoes or anything, and recognized it with the bottom of his feet, the vibrations. Each vibration from each key as it traveled down the piano. Can you imagine that? But then it was becoming difficult, so what he decided to do was to cut the legs of the piano, set the piano on the floor, and sit and listen with his whole body. Hit the keys hard and listen with his whole body. And he was there, and even like that, he couldn't hear as well as he could, as he wanted to. So, at the very end of his life, he would be lying down, hitting the piano, the keys of the piano, with his ear stuck to the floor, trying to listen. And while he was like that, he composed the music of a hymn that most of us probably listen to, but that he was never able to hear.
Thank you.
Can't give up on your dream if you feel that way. If you feel that the best is still inside of you, can't give up. And that's why I always feel I can't give up. I can't give up on my dreams. I remember that I heard my good friend Wayne Dyer tell a story and said, you know, we have this fire inside us all the time. And it's like two wild dogs. And there's the evil dog and there's the good dog. And the good dog is always telling you, you can do it, go for it. And the evil dog is saying, what are you talking about? You're not worth it. Quit. And the good dog is saying, you can do anything you want in life. And the evil dog is saying, you know, be lucky you got where you are now. You're going to lose everything if you risk. And the good dog is saying, you know, you're a winner. You are successful. The seal of happiness and success is inside of you. And the evil dog says, you're nothing. You're going to do what? Are you crazy? And somebody asked him, and what dog usually wins that fight? What dog usually wins that fight? You know what he said? He said, you know what dog usually wins? The one who speaks the most. The one who speaks the most. What are you talking about? That you're looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, oh, I can't do this. But if you are feeding that dog that says you can do anything, then you'll succeed. You'll succeed. And that's it. That's what it takes for us to make that decision to let our dreams rise. I'm so excited, and every time I have this opportunity to talk to people who decided, yes, I want to do that, I want to be the one, I'm always excited. And Kurt Foley was telling me about the book. He said, man, I read the book and I realized I needed to kill some cows. I'm excited, and sometimes people come to me and say, well, how does it feel to be in a cow-free zone? No cows! I gotta kill cows all the time! You gotta kill cows all the time! You gotta be always on your toes. And that's what we always feed our minds. And I want to thank you for this. I want to thank you for this opportunity. I want to thank Kurt for the invitation. I want to be out here. I have my books right here, and outside to walk through those doors. I know that some of you asked me that they want me to sign the books. I have some books in English and in Spanish as well. About how to kill cows. How to kill cows and how to build great success plans. I want to thank you for your time. God bless you. And thank you.